What's up, y'all? Here's a quick recap of last week.
I want the cross of Christ to preside over everything I write. Mm. But that's it's beautiful, right? But I think it's a good thing. I understand the ugliness of human sin, the ugliness of empire, the ugliness of a absolute commitment to power. All of that is present, you know, in the act of crucifixion. But it's also divine love. It's Father, forgive him. It's Christ with his arms outstretched in proffered embrace saying, Father, forgive them.
Welcome back to part two. I'm so happy you're here. Let's dive in where we left off.
And then what happens, Christians had always confessed that Jesus is Lord. And that wasn't so much, I mean, Lord was a political title granted by the Roman Senate to the Caesar. And so you would just say Caesar is Lord because, you know, the Senate says so. And Christians were funny. They would kind of say, no, actually Jesus is Lord.
Right.
And by implication, and Caesar is not. He's just, you know, some guy running the government or something. He's not Lord. And this is what got them in trouble. The Roman Empire was actually very tolerant of religious exercise, of various religions. They had to be, you know, they didn't really care what your religion was. They cared about your politics. So that if the gospel had been, if you'll pray to this guy named Jesus, that when you die, you can go to heaven. Well, the Romans would have said, yeah, we don't even care where you go when you die. You can go to heaven, go wherever you like. And they wouldn't have been persecuted. It was because Christians said, no, Jesus is Lord here and now. There is another king. It's radically different. It's nothing like the kingdoms of this world. And our allegiance is pledged there. And then they were persecuted for that. And then they were conspicuously absent from the various holidays that kind of unified Roman culture when they would venerate different gods and goddesses, especially Roma, the patron goddess of Rome. And Christians wouldn't show up for those. And this is why there was a political component behind their persecution. Well, now that you have a Christian emperor, well, Jesus is Lord, but kind of only in a religious way, because actually Caesar's Lord, because he's a Christian. And I know he wages wars and all of that, but still, he's one of us. So Jesus, in effect, gets demoted, because you can't get rid of Jesus. You're not going to do that. You call yourselves Christians. Jesus gets demoted from being Lord to kind of secretary of afterlife affairs. Jesus' job now is to get you into heaven when you die.
Right.
And the church then becomes increasingly more like the world.
Wow.
And less distinct and radical. And So what's happening in America now with, and let's throw in another, and Russia, Christian nationalism, you know, is out of control in Russia under the, Patriarch Kirill, the Russian Orthodox Patriarch of Moscow. He's, you know, championing Putin's horrific invasion of the Ukrainian people.
Wow.
In the name of the Lord, you know. So the phenomenon of Christian nationalism, Russian version or American version, is actually nothing new. It's been going on for 17 centuries. But it's always a compromise of the gospel. It never ends well. It always makes our witness so deeply compromised that I at some point we just have to say, enough. We're done with this. We're not going to bow down to empire.
So is it foolish then to, because, you know, we're always voting on who.
This is tricky. This is tricky. I know where you're going. Keep going.
Yeah, like we always want a quote unquote Christian in the White House, but it just reminds me of what you're saying. Like, that's the guy who's gonna wage war if somebody attacks us. He's gonna have to respond or retaliate. And if he says, I can't, I'm a Christian, then like he's gonna be gone. So it's like, should we really be wanting that?
So this is this is the tricky part of being a Christian in a participatory democracy. I mean, the early Christians, they didn't have a chance to vote, and they didn't have a chance to vote even after the empire became Christian, right? Mm. I mean, it wasn't a democracy. So we do have a democracy. For a long time, I would vote at a local level. I would vote locally. But as far as the presidential election would go, I thought, well, I don't want my vote for so-and-so to be construed as my authorization for someone to wage war on my behalf. And so I would go to the polls because I was going to vote locally anyway. And I would always, every 4 years, I would come up with, I was always real creative about who I would write in. Of course, you know, I've written in Bob Dylan. I have written his name in. I wrote in Wendell Berry. I don't know if you know who Wendell Berry is. I wrote in Wendell Berry. I wrote in Treebeard 1 year. I thought, oh, man, that'd be awesome. Let's just put Treebeard in charge. And this went on for a long time until about, let's see. I don't know how many. I'm losing track here. But then I thought, well, maybe that's just sort of an act of privilege on my part. Mm. That I kind of feel like, hey, it's going to be okay for me one way or the other, whoever's running the show. So then I changed, and I actually told my church that I did this. I didn't tell them who, but I told them. I said, so what I've done is I found one of our undocumented members in our church. I think this was the Trump-Hillary election. And I went to this person and I said, look, you know, we got this here election coming up. You may have heard of it. I know you can't vote. You're not allowed to vote. I said, you've got more at stake in this than I do. So here's what I want you to do. Take you know, a few weeks, think about it, pray about it or not, do whatever you want, read about it or not, you know. But you know, before election day, I'm going to come see you and I'm going to ask you who, if you could vote, you would vote for. And then I will just be your errand boy and I'll go to the polls and cast your vote for you.
Mm.
And we don't have too many people like that, but I did have one of my church members who's kind of well, they didn't like that. They came up to me and they said, you can't do that. That's illegal. I said, it's not illegal. You can't vote on behalf of somebody else. I said, sure I can. I mean, you let Fox News tell you who to vote for, so I'm going to let so-and-so tell me who to vote for. So I'm always in this tension between I don't want to be irresponsibly aloof, kind of, you know, quietism would be the technical term for that from a Christian perspective, where I just don't want to mess. I'm just going to stay out. I'm going to stay above the fray. You know, sometimes I can go to, I feel like I'm drawn there, but the moment I know that if I get drawn into the whole political thing, it's toxic.
Yeah.
It's full of vitriol. It's a winner take all blood sport now. And so I, you know, can a Christian be president? Well, I think the one in history, the one who was probably most conscientious about being a Christian and also occupying the White House was Jimmy Carter. And I think most people would say his presidency was somewhat of a failed presidency.
Mm.
Because if you do want a Christian, you don't want a very good one. you want a someone's not really very good at being a Christian, because I think there's a way to maintain a prophetic influence that helps direct society, and we decry injustice and we call people to righteousness without direct involvement in the whole political process, which I'm increasingly suspicious that you can do so without tremendous damage to your soul.
Hmm.
I don't know.
Yeah,
I
agree.
But I mean, my best attempt at political theology would be Postcards from Babylon, that book. But I'll tell you something about political theology. For me, I never feel like I get it right. It just feels like it's so razor thin that I'm never quite content at where I'm at.
Mm.
And so, you know, so I don't know.
So the danger is to like not even participate. That's kind of where I find myself
I think some individuals need to take that route. I think there are some individuals that just need to say, you know what, you can make your case, but I know it's going to destroy my soul, and I just have to pull away from it.
Yeah.
That's wisdom. I know there's kind of the background that I came from, grew up heavily kind of feeding into and believing, you know, the Seven Mountain Prophecy, you know, God was going to strategically place all these people at the top in the most powerful positions, you know, and
you see, it's an adulation of power.
Exactly.
Which the cross is the antithesis of.
Exactly.
Hmm.
And so it's interesting because, you know, I used to hear people who come to our churches or conferences and stuff, and you know, they would get these prophetic words of God is calling you to government. You're going to be the president. Like, I legitimately heard.
Take up your sword and follow me.
Yeah, that's exactly what it's saying. Yeah. And so it's been so interesting to see how all that has played out, you know, pre-Trump and this whole America First, Make America Great Again thing. And now post, now where there's been this like sort of apocalyptic times of the truth coming to be revealed about what some of these prophetic voices really were.
Can I talk about Trump for a second?
Yeah, go for it.
You know, I'm from the Jesus movement. I'm 64. I'm about as young as you can be and really have been in the Jesus movement. I was leading a ministry when I was 17.
Wow.
I had a dramatic encounter with Jesus when I was 16. Overnight kind of went from being the high school Led Zeppelin freak to the high school Jesus freak, although I still get the lead out, you know? But anyway, and by the time I was 17, I was leading a ministry. It was a coffee house ministry. That's what we called them. It was mostly a music venue for the Jesus music scene that eventually turned into Word of Life Church 41 years ago. And I've been the pastor there. And so that's where I come from. And the Jesus movement kind of flows into the charismatic movement. The charismatic movement kind of flows into the Word of Faith movement, the mega church, all that. So I've lived my life in that world. I know it intimately. There might be some, there are some certainly no doubt that know that world as well as I do. I don't know if anybody knows it any better. I don't know how you could. It's been my family, right, for almost 50 years. Every day I find myself completely befuddled as to how my Jesus freak compatriots from the 1970s have turned into MAGA evangelists in the 2020s. I find it utterly, well, I'm going to say, I know that world as well as anyone. I still find it utterly incomprehensible. I think, what has happened? What has happened? Mm-hmm. I mean, in the person of Donald Trump, I'm trying to speak just very objectively. I think you have fairly close to a public embodiment of everything that Jesus is not.
Yeah.
I mean, it would be hard for me to think of someone who would be more of an embodiment of everything that the Sermon on the Mount is not. It seems that in his, at least the way he presents himself in his lore, is that he is the very antithesis of the Beatitudes and the Sermon on the Mount. And yet Christians want to, well, we're not voting for a pastor. No, you're voting for the president, but what you want is a corrupt, oft bankrupt, fake New York billionaire. I don't understand how they got there. Yeah. I think it had to do with I can tell you the Jesus movement, the charismatic movement, the evangelical movement of the 60s, 70s was pretty radically apolitical. The Jesus movement, for sure. We were just suspicious of all this, you know, we're like, politics. And, but then with the 80s, there began this idea that the great sin is abortion. And this is why we need to enter the fray to take care of that problem. And in mass, these movements, including the charismatics and all that, entered the political world with stunning naivete. And instead of going in with eyes wide open, saying, you know, politics is a dirty world. It's a world of backroom deals and compromise, and you're not going to find generally the most noble characters operating therein. It became for them like Dead Sea Scrolls sort of thing, the sons of darkness and the sons of light in this great impending battle for the soul of a nation.
Yeah, yeah.
That kind of language. So that now it's with religious devotion that people identify with a political party, with religious devotion, religious devotion. It's not a matter of, okay, how are we going to run the polis? How are we going to, try to move society towards human flourishing and common good? No, it's my team is righteous and your team is demon-possessed pedophiles.
Yeah.
Right.
And this will not end well. This, you guys are a generation or two younger than me. It's driving your generation right out of the church.
Yeah.
I mean, they see the hypocrisy, they're disgusted by it, and I don't blame them. And I mean, what I want to say to them is there are other options. They're not this most vocal and visible expression of Christianity in America in this contemporary moment is not the only option.
Yeah.
There are other expressions of Christian faith being lived in as a community, but still, there's a trajectory. I mean, can people get free from this? They can, but it's, I think, younger people of color, but I think most white evangelicals my age, it would take, I don't know what it'd take, a Damascus Road experience.
Yeah.
Their leaders could help them, but their leaders are the ones who have led them into it.
Yeah.
And I think this movement doesn't end, it just dies out. It doesn't repent, it just dies out. And I'm being a little bit caustic, but I'm mostly sad.
Yeah.
And when I see the pastors doing this, I think of a line from the, it's not actually in the book, but it's in the film. It's when Treebeard sees what Saruman has been up to, and he says, "A wizard should know better." I look at these pastors and I think a wizard should know better.
Yeah,
yeah,
yeah. I don't see it coming. I just see it intensifying, and it reminds me of, with the whole Trump thing, when he decided to be "quote unquote" Christian. It reminds me of when which you said you were a fan of music too. There's something that happens in the Christian music industry that whenever a quote unquote secular famous person gets saved or says that they believe in God, they latch onto him and make him the front runner of everything that is Christian. It happened when Homeboy from Korn got saved. It happened when the Backstreet Boys guy got saved. And it's like they're our new savior because they have
because they have fame, wealth, power. And power is the real key word.
Sure.
Power can be, there's political power, there's the power of fame, there's the power of wealth. Mm-hmm. But we are so enthralled by conventional power.
Yeah.
Well, because we don't want to take up the cross. The cross involves loss. The cross involves, of all the radical things Jesus said, it might be the most radical. If you want to be my disciple, we started this conversation with the cross. Let's go back to it. Take up the most horrific instrument of state-sponsored execution and follow me, that means be prepared to suffer and die. Take up a willingness to suffer and die. And that is the one thing that in Americanized Christianity, we are unwilling to do. No. We will not suffer.
Yeah.
We're not going to suffer. We're not going to lose. We're not going to suffer. Certainly not going to die. We're not going to be killed. We're going to win. We're going to enforce our will, because our will is righteous. We're going to enforce our will upon our neighbors. And we'll use the instruments of force, political force, behind which is always the sword.
Right.
We will use that means to achieve righteousness, to bring about God's will. No. God doesn't raise up political leaders. God raised Jesus from the dead. And Jesus is Lord. All power is given unto him. He's the only one that is worthy to bear it. He's the only one that can have it and not be corrupted by it. Jesus doesn't tell us to take up power, take up a sword, take up influence, take up fame. He says, take up your cross. Be willing to lose. Be willing to be diminished. If you're struck, turn the other cheek. Yeah. I think Christians are embarrassed by that. Americanized Christians are embarrassed that Jesus talks like that. And they want to pretend that he doesn't. I literally had, this is years ago, but so when I really began to go through my theological, spiritual transformation in midlife, one of the things I did that was, it was dangerous, it was radical, but it was good, was I preached for 6 months through the Sermon on the Mount. And every Sunday I'd have church members come up and say, are you saying? And then they would, I would say, oh, I'm trying not to say anything. I'm just trying to let Jesus speak for himself. What do you think he means there? And because it would create too much cognitive dissonance for them to argue directly with Jesus.
Yeah.
So they just put me there. And, but I did have I had a guy that he's a good man. He's a good man. He's no longer in our church, but I still think fondly of him. He loves the Lord. He, would bring people to church, generous, came from a military background, liked that. He liked all that sort of stuff. And he came up to me one day and he said, after his sermon, he said, I was preaching on out of Matthew 5, nonviolence. And he said, yeah, but the Bible says an eye for an eye and a tooth for a tooth. I said, well, yeah, but Jesus says, you've heard it said, an eye for an eye and a tooth for a tooth, but I say, but he said, no, yeah, but still, the Bible says an eye for an eye and a tooth for a tooth. He was using the Bible to argue with Jesus. And I didn't even quite know how to respond. I thought, wow, you really are committed to the idea of retributive violence. It's a very seductive thing that weak, and this is the American cowboy justice myth.
Yeah.
You know, that all wrongs can be set to right by the gunslinger and his trusty six shooter. Kill the bad guys. Yeah. There's things wrong with the world. Let's kill the bad guys.
Yeah.
And this is completely the antithesis of Christianity. Christ becomes king not by killing anybody. I mean, this is what they expect. The idea of Messiah means, you know, the anointed king, the one sent by God to liberate, to save, to rescue. And they were looking for someone like David, or maybe in the first century, more like Judah Maccabee, the military Jewish hero from 150 years earlier, who had at least had some victories against the Seleucid overlords. And he was, Maccabee means hammer. He was known as Judah the Hammer because he put the hammer down on those Gentiles. And that's what they were looking for. When I say they, I mean pretty much everybody. I think Jesus' mom was looking for that. I think his disciples were looking for that. I think John the Baptist was looking for that. John the Baptist gets arrested. He's in prison. He's like, y'all want to send a message to Jesus and ask him, when's the revolution going to start? Because, you know, like, here I am.
Yeah.
And so when do we start killing the Romans and overthrowing this thing? And so the messengers go. And at that time, Jesus is healing people and proclaiming the good news of the kingdom. And they said, hey, John wants to know, are you the guy? Are you the one? Or we just look for someone else? And he said, go tell John what you've just seen in here. Just what you've seen, that the poor have good news preached to them, the sick are healed. And blessed are those who aren't disappointed with me.
Yeah.
I mean, Jesus is saying this. Go tell John the kingdom is here right now. It's happening. This is it. And you'll be blessed if you're not disappointed. Now understand that Jesus, on the one hand, Jesus says, of those born of women, which is a very large category, of those born of women, there has not arisen a greater than John the Baptist. So in this long history of the prophetic tradition, John is a pinnacle. In some way, there's no one what more holy, more I don't know, whatever. He's some kind of pinnacle, but Jesus, but the kingdom of heaven is so different than what anything you've anticipated or expected. Those that are least in the kingdom are greater than John. Jesus is respectful of John, he is, but he's just saying, if you guys think this kingdom is going to be like David killing Goliath or Judah Maccabee, you know, killing the Greeks. That I'm just now going to be, you know, Jesus the hammer and start killing Romans. You have no idea what this kingdom looks like. It's completely, radically other. And I think when I say that, I think a Christian should go, I think you're right. But yeah. American Christians find it so hard to believe that.
Yeah.
Because we've made a god of George Washington.
Yeah. That's true, though.
I heard it said, I think it was Richard Rohr, and he talked about, he said, Christianity is another way of saying how to lose graciously. Mm-hmm. And that's so counterintuitive. And everything that you're saying feels subversive to what we've been raised in, what we've been taught to believe, and very much so the thing that a lot of people hold on to and what they're fighting for.
Yeah.
And so I think it's in Postcards from Babylon where you talk about, you're like, let's make Christianity Christian again.
Yeah.
And yeah. So Manny, I know you got to roll out soon, right?
I do. I'm heading to LA. But you totally, oh, look at this. Jimmy Carter book was awesome. We had some DMs, people get DPM. Jimmy Carter's book was awesome. He was more Christian than a president in it. That's cool.
I think he's still with us, but he's, you know, he's in hospice and he's coming into the end of his journey. But what a wonderful man. Mm. What a wonderful man. I mean, he's president, serves one term, and then gives the rest of his life to building homes for the poor.
Yeah.
Go find me a MAGA Christian that'll say something good about Jimmy Carter.
Right.
Come on.
I think I'm excited to finish Postcards for the second time because it's hitting me in different ways. I think because an election cycle is coming. And again, I've never been political. I'm the guy that can talk politics and I will not get upset. It doesn't matter what you say.
I admire that. I want to be like that. Lay hands on me.
Only because I genuinely believe that these people are just placating us. They're not riding for us. They're not my team. They're just not. They're going to say what they need to say just so they can get elected, and that's just it. So I'm not taking them serious at all. But I am taking the idea, because I think there's still lingering parts of me that are like, I need to get as much American Christianity out of me as possible. Really, really do, because I don't like that a lot of these ideologies still exist in my mind, and that I still have small reasons for, oh, I should be able to enact violence if this happens or if this mm-hmm. happens. But at the end of the day, it's like, bruh, this is, Jesus was literally nonviolent. Like, and there's no other, he didn't give you excuses or reasons for when you could be. It genuinely is a denial of everything that we hold true as Americans that make us freaking Americans, you know? And it's just not good.
Gandhi said, everyone knows Jesus taught nonviolence except Christians. That's brutal, man.
That is so brutal.
It's bad. But then it's such an emotional thing. Like, I think this is why I check out, is because I genuinely feel like I don't know if any of the conversation has power or sway to change
Manuel, I think you should just stay right on that path. That sounds like wisdom to me.
Yeah. Man, I'm so grateful. B, did you want to say anything?
Oh, no. I was going to say what you're probably going to say.
I feel like we have just been in school. And
the best way possible, because like for some people,
it was like an hour of school.
Going to school is like the worst thing ever.
I love
this.
This
is like
for us.
So rich, and everything that you've shared today, Brian, and you even carving out time to be on our podcast. Seriously, such a huge honor.
Yeah. It's the best kind of school, because me and B are like nerds in the sense of like this stuff really does change our lives. Like I'm literally like, I was quiet for most of it. Like, I'm going to have to change my life a little bit more now, because this is like fresh revelation and continual, like it's continually pushing us down the road that I feel like B and I are already walking towards. But it's like giving us a drink of water while we're walking down that road, because it is not a popular Christian way of thinking, talking. I get it all the time. There's so many things that you said today that even, like, I had a guy on our Instagram, I mean our YouTube video, say, Manny, stop saying you need to take relationship with Christ more serious and stop saying God's name in vain. Because I said, oh my God. And I started doing a deep dive on what it meant to take God's name in vain. And a lot of what you were saying resonated with what I was studying or learning about taking God's name in vain, taking the appearance of Christ or the idea or his name, but then acting counterintuitive to who God truly is and how he truly acts. That's taking his name, his image in vain. And I'm like, dang, I did that a lot by saying something godly or like trying to make myself godly, but acting opposite. So in a godly way, saying, yeah, let's go and kill them, those terrorists.
Yeah.
You know, because that's the holy or right thing to do. And it's like, man, I was so off, which is what I continually learn about my walk with Christ, which I love it. But man, thank you so much.
It's been a delight to be with you guys, really.
Go ahead, B.
I was going to say, this conversation and what you've shared, and then I just think overall who you are, Brian. You know, I think your voice and your messages and your writings have been very prophetic in the sense of a lot of ways, but one of the things is calling us back to reality, right? What's real, and separating that from the illusion that a lot of people are stuck in and can't see out of. And so I think this conversation today, I just feel like, man, I just like anytime that I'm hearing you share, it makes me want to be more like Jesus, in the sense of like, man, I want what that guy has, right? Like, if we're a person, I'd be like, I'd go old school. Hey, can you lay hands on me and pray for me?
Yeah.
So with all that being said, we really appreciate it again.
Super excited for your new book that's going to come out. Can't wait to get that, man. And we'll put all your links in the description so that people can get all your books, man. We appreciate it so much. Thanks for taking time. And like we always say on this podcast, we pray you find a seat at the table. But if you don't, you are always welcome at ours. Cheers.